Network proudly presents The Jay Clay Show. Your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names that special. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for starting off the show in such style. He is absolutely right. I'm Jay Flama, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It is the spiciest. It's the boldest. It's the most amazing hot sauce out there on the market. It's on every table in the Deep South, and it should be on yours. When it says JB's, it's the best. All right, also a big thank you to our last guest, Steve Eubanks of Global Golf Post, for coming on the show. And now we are going to go right straight to our next guest. He is former writer for Sports Illustrated, and you can still read his work online, and you can follow him along on Twitter and on Facebook. Gary Van Sickle, welcome back to the Jay's Place Show. It's nice to have you again.
It's great to be had, Jay.
All right, let's get right to it. Okay. I know that you were very impressed, especially this weekend, with Tiger Woods' performance. So tell us a little bit about what you saw out of Tiger this weekend and, you know, put his comeback in perspective for us.
Well, I think the two things to take out of it are that Tiger still got some game in there. He had his vertebra fused. He had fusion in his back, and a lot of us thought he might never forget about winning. He might never play another tournament. And here he is. He's back. He's got club head speed with his driver up to 128 miles an hour. He's hit some 330-yard drives. Frankly, that's astonishing. Now, whether he gets his game back and can win, that's another story. But he's not that far from where he used to be. So that's pretty incredible. And I think the other thing we learned was Tiger Mania kind of still lives, you know, maybe in part because 10 years have elapsed since he was really, winning majors. And a lot of people who were 20 years old kind of missed him the first time. I mean, this is your chance to go out and see, you know, I don't want to say farewell tour because he's too young for that, but you get an encore presentation to go see Tiger Woods, maybe get back in contention and be something. And I thought what was amazing was how all the networks and Golf Channel and all the media, you name it, Tiger Woods, every move was chronicled, Tiger Tracker on every website, here, shot by shot. You know, we all thought golf was in a great place because we got the wonderful Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson, who's amazing, and Jason Day, who's a great guy. And here comes Justin Thomas, who's pretty amazing. He's like, oh, what a bunch of nice guys. Everybody likes them. But they don't move the needle anywhere near the way Tiger and Phil did. And Tiger's back, and we don't even know if he's ever going to contend, but he kind of got sort of close in Honda to contending. And we got reminded that when he comes in, he blots out the sun. It's a whiteout as far as coverage of anything else. You know, if you're Pat and Kazire or somebody else, nobody even remembers what you did because Tiger showed up and played a few weeks later. So I thought that was amazing that Tiger still brings this incredible glare of attention that kind of blinds everybody from seeing the rest of the tournament. And maybe that'll wear off if he starts playing more, but I kind of think it won't unless he just plays terrible. And, you know, we saw at Honda that he's capable of finishing in the top 10, maybe contending. We'll see. I think he finished 12th at Honda. I thought that was important to see, to find out that Tiger can still play and America and especially the media, which reflects the public's taste, they are really into whatever he does. So he's back and we're back, and that's the story.
Well, you know, it was interesting that his playing partner on Sunday, Sam Potts, was 8 months old, I think it was, when Tiger first won the Masters.
That's an amazing stat, isn't it? You just, time flies. You know, the older you get, and I can speak because I am older. It's like the time accelerates. You know, you always see these 80-year-old people walk around like everything's flying past them. Well, it's because time accelerates. Ask anybody who's over 70, they'll tell you things just seem to go faster. And how did 20 years slip by so fast? Tiger was just, you know, it was just 1997. He wins the Masters and he's got this perfect swing and he makes every putt and he works, he got the best short game. He's got the 1,000-watt smile. He was like the second coming of the Beatles in golf. And, you know, that kind of wore off somewhat, but never, never totally. And, you know, he's still one of the most famous men on the planet, not just most famous sportsman. I mean, he's one of the most famous names on this planet. And he's back playing golf after back surgery that could have done him in. And it's shocking how big of a deal he still is to everybody. And I think I wouldn't say I was surprised by it, but you know, I've said ever since he went down in 2008 that if he ever comes back and wins another major after all he's been through, It's only going to, as soon as he wins one major, 5 seconds after it's over, the media hysterically will start the Jack countdown to 18 majors because, you know, it's a chance to write history. They love that stuff. They go gaga. They go overboard. And Tiger Mania may have gone away, but I think the Honda proved that it doesn't take much to bring it back. It's ready to fall on us again any moment. It's halfway here already.
Well, you know, I think that that's a double-edged sword, though. You know, Steve Eubanks, who was our guest on the show earlier, said that, you know, we sometimes go overboard with Woods and sometimes tend to overstate the case in both ways. You know, when he plays well, people are saying he's back. When he plays poorly, people are saying that he's done. And it's been a roller coaster like that. You know, I've made the observation that, in a way, the media are like junkies, and Tiger is the drug.
Oh, that's totally true. He has made, you know, let's face it, you want to write stories. You know, writers all have egos. Let's admit that everybody in TV has an ego. Everybody wants to be part of something important. So the writers probably secretly root for something important to happen because that makes their story more important. You know, if you're covering Hogan's loss to Jack Fleck in 55 at the Open, you know, that's a big deal. So you want to be there for the big events, and Tiger's a big event, and you get to write history when he wins. And it's not the same as when you're writing Patton Kizzire wins. I mean, you know, he wins and your readers aren't familiar with him and it just doesn't make a ripple with them. So, there's a lot of self-importance there. That's absolutely true. And, you know, the public loved Tiger Woods and there's no question about that. He took golf and got it on the front page of the sports section, sometimes on the front page of the paper. I mean, let's not forget when he was coming back from his, his hydrant episode, and he eventually winds up at the sexual therapy clinic. I mean, he had what, like 90 days? I mean, he was the top of the page. He was page one story every day in every tabloid around the world for literally like 3 months.
Oh, more. And significantly more.
However long it was. I mean, but he was the story of the day in the world every day for 4 months. Where is he? Nobody could find me. To me, I would argue that Tiger's greatest accomplishment might have been hiding from the paparazzi for 4 months because these guys know what they're doing. And I don't, you know, he must have been in the Batcave or something because it's next to impossible to escape these guys. And he finally turns up. So, that's how big of a deal he was. And, he's still, you know, that following is still there. He's still bigger than golf. He's still bigger than life. And if he comes back and wins anything, oh, my gosh, you're going to see stories like you won't believe. But people, you know, writers want big things to happen so they can write about them. You know, Fred Funk winning isn't going to get you an award or make your story get, you know, more readers. Tiger finishing seventh, you know, is going to get – that's a story. People will read it. You know, that's the one thing about the Internet is learn that what stories get clicks. And I can tell you that the Tiger stories about Tiger and Phil back, I mean, I'm like talk 6-7 years ago, if the story wasn't about Tiger or Phil and golf, you couldn't get, nobody clicks on it. And that's changed
well, you
somewhat
know, that,
now, but if Tiger's back, you know, you're going to still click on Tiger. It's just that simple.
Yes, but casual eyeballs are fickle eyeballs, and they don't pay. You know, we've all seen that the click method of pay didn't work because nobody clicked through. So it really didn't matter that you had 500,000 casual eyeballs. The question is to keep bringing back the 200,000 ardent people. And I did talk to a lot of ardent golf fans in the last 3 weeks. Sorry, in the last 3 weeks that Tiger has been back, which has been a longer period. It's been about 5 weeks, almost six. And they all say that there's just too much Woods on television, that we're getting too much coverage of a guy coming in 12th, that a lot of these broadcasters are missing a good tournament. And nothing underscored that than the headlines in the papers where big headline blares, Tiger impresses. We don't pay Tiger Woods to come in 12th. We don't pay Tiger Woods to come in 44th. The amount of, gee, it's nice to have you back. Gee, that's great. It is nice to have you back. But that's not what we expect out of Tiger Woods. And you watch, if he keeps coming in 44th, even if he keeps coming in 12th, that's not going to translate to more money for the golf industry. It's not going to translate to more ardent fans. It's going to go back to, you know, the same people that were watching once he arrived are going to go back away eventually if he turns out to be boring.
He was within a couple shots of the lead on Sunday, and he comes back and finishes 12th. He's played, what, three tournaments in 3 years after back fusion? And in his third event, he's 12th? And you don't think that's significant? I mean, that is significant. He's not even sharp yet, and he's 12th. What is that? Doesn't that tell you that something's going on there? Yeah, if he finishes 12th from now on, yeah, who cares? But he's three tournaments in, and he's 12th. That's astounding.
And that, and the fact that his clubhead speed is as fast as it is, and
yeah,
some of those drives were gargantuan. That was the surprise, was that he was able
Absolutely.
To driving over 330 yards frequently. But I was more surprised at how straight pretty much he drove it. After he missed the cut a couple of weeks ago at the Genesis, I thought for sure he was going to be hitting it in water hazards all over Palm Beach Gardens.
He had a good week, and if he could have played the 17th hole better, you know, he probably would have finished fifth or sixth. But, you know, there's a lot of ifs in golf, but it tells you he's got enough game to get in contention. You know, can he win? That's another story. But three tournaments in for him to play like that, that's an eye-opener. And his short game is sharp. I thought he might have developed the yips with the putter. He putted pretty well. He doesn't putt as great as he did, but that was true, you know, even before he got hurt, which was, it's hard to even keep track of which back injury it was now. But, you know, he's just got to straighten out the driver. And ironically, that's what we said from 2006 until 2015. If he could just straighten out the driver, he'd be dangerous. Well, he had 10 years and he never straightened it out. So I think that tells you he's probably never going to straighten it out. But he did better at Honda. And like I said, it was impressive. I think to downplay his 12th place finish at Honda is just to miss the point that this guy's only played three tournaments in a couple of years, and look where he is. And look at his clubhead speed. He's not some guy who, you know, faked his way around and chipped and putted like a maniac and saved the score. Here's a guy who can, you know, these young kids aren't hitting it 20 yards past him. He's hitting it 330. So he's got a chance to be pretty good again. We'll just see how he can do. But you can't write him off. The people who said he's never going to win again, he's never going to even play again, those people right now are looking like that's a bad bet. If you were betting your life savings right now on whether Tiger's going to win a tournament, any tournament, the answer a year ago was absolutely not. Right now, the answer is not absolutely not. And now it's like, yeah, I might have to bet on him. I don't know. It's an early call, but the fact that he's made such progress so quickly is something that, you know, it has people buzzing. You know, whether you like Tiger or hate him, it doesn't matter either way. It's got people buzzing. The amount of coverage he gets is, And this has been true since day one. He's blotted out the sun ever since he came out. Nobody, how many good winning stories have we, you know, have we not written because you were too busy writing, Tiger didn't win, but he did this or that. He comes in third and you write about that instead of writing about the guy who won. That's been going on forever. It went on when Nicklaus won. It went on when Arnie was a great player. You know, golf is a game that seems to lend itself to a narrative of a superstar, of a dominant player, better than anything else. You know, parody in golf is kind of boring. We've seen that, and we don't get attached to any one guy because he doesn't win enough. It really, game really works better, men's or women's golf, if you have a one player on top who really is the king of the hill, and that just kind of lends an air of vibrancy to the telecast and to the game and to the writing.
I don't know. I kind of like having at least two guys up there, especially two big men.
Oh, I agree.
Even
I mean,
three.
The best, yeah. I agree.
You know, it gets boring when it's the same guy all the time. And we get in a rut when we think, when we let that happen too. Now, I will throw you a little bit of catnip, and that is Woods is going to play well at Augusta because Woods always plays well at Augusta. Guys who play well at Augusta play well at Augusta throughout their entire career. Guys that win at Augusta repeat frequently more than any other major.
I think that's, if you don't think he's going to finish in the top 10, I mean, you almost have to think he's going to. It's just, there's this thing called scoring ability, and it's hard to get it back once you've been away. And you can practice all the time, but it really comes down to it. You can't give away shots, and it's hard to get that back. I mean, you saw that Tiger Woods playing the Honda on some of the par threes. You know, he lost some shots that he didn't use to lose. He made mistakes that he didn't use to make. So at Augusta with under the pressure and all that, not that he hasn't been there before, but he hasn't been there for a long time. It's just hard to get back to the level you were at before. You know, I remember reading in Michael Bamberger's book, Men in Green, which has Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus. I forget who's putting the green jacket on the other on the cover, but they were young and life was great. But in that book, Arnold Palmer talked and said, you know, once you lose your edge, you never really get it back. And he lost his edge. I think he said, gosh, you know, it was pretty early in his career. Surprisingly, he felt like he lost his edge maybe after Oakmont or something. I don't remember what the book said, but I was shocked to read that. And he said he'd lost his edge. And, you know, he you know, after 66, losing to Billy Casper, I mean, he never won another major. Arnie had kind of a short run as a great player, but you're absolutely right. You need a foil. You need a rival. You know, how many stories did we write? How many times did we write the story in the 90s? In the 2000s, who is Tiger's rival?
Well, it kept bouncing around to a bunch of faces that you don't remember. Phil never seemed to battle Tiger when Tiger was winning a major, and Tiger never seemed to battle Phil when Phil was winning a major. But for a long time, it was all these also-rans. Bob May, Chris DeMarco, Jose Maria Olazabal. Just these flash in the pan, one and done names that were having a good week. You know, it was nobody that you could say, aha, you know, this is a good match. When Sergio battled Tiger, it was the first time out for Sergio in 1998. It rarely was Rocco Mediate, again, out of nowhere. But it wasn't Phil, it wasn't often DJ, it wasn't often, you know, somebody else that we, you know, that was in the pantheon of the great players at the time. Yeah, once in a blue moon. But Lee Westwood, for example, okay, somebody, he still hasn't won a major, let alone beaten Tiger and win a major. But Augusta
you're right. It's always better to have a rivalry. Go back to Kari Webb and Annika Sorenstam. That was pretty good before that. It was Amy Elcott and Beth Daniel. You know, in senior golf, honestly, even for a while, you had Dr. Gill and Hill Irwin. That was kind of a fun rivalry for a while. So it's the big three. What was better than that? So you're right.
But you had Jack and Tom.
Rivalry.
Jack and Tom,
that's right. You had Watson come along. Norman came along, didn't really have a rival, but he didn't really win it.
Norman's rival.
It's so rare for anybody to, more than one guy to be good enough to get in, get in contention to win a major repeatedly. So you just don't
see. It's a one in a generation
now. Yeah, you got more parity now, and I think that's partly caused by the equipment, which is more forgiving and enables everybody, you know, to hit good shots. And you go back to Nicklaus hitting the persimmon ball, or persimmon wood with a wound ball. You know, he was driving it 30 yards past everybody, and he also hit it straighter. And there was such a small margin for error with that ball. He was just that much better than everybody. So it was surprising that anybody could consistently go up against him. And now it's, you know, now with the equipment and all that and the conditioning, it's hard for guys to get up there a lot and have a chance to win a major. You might have two or three chances in your career to win a major if you're better than average tour pro. And the odds of you running into the same guy more than once are pretty slim. So we'll see what happens. You know, Jason Day and Jordan Spieth have a little history, but not that much. And is it ever going to amount to anything? You know, Rory won a bunch of his majors by like 8 shots. So who's his rival? It's hard to have a rivalry. It's rare in golf, and it's as rare as having superstars who are, you know, an era. So that's where we are right now. And
we're in an era of new superstars, though, too. I for one, am very impressed with Spieth and Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy, and that I didn't miss Woods. I really didn't. There were plenty of fantastic majors without him. Okay, Dan Jenkins says that even though Valhalla is one of the most terrible golf courses he's ever seen, and I agree, that finish was one of the best he's ever seen, where Rory was doing battle with Phil and a whole pack of other guys and Ricky Fowler all nipping at his heels. It took 16 under to win. You know, golf's been in great hands without Woods. And we don't need all the drama, and we don't need all the tabloids, and we don't need all the darker and seedier things that have happened. So let's talk a little bit about these other players. So pick your poison in the Masters. Justin Thomas is playing great. Spieth is still solid as ever. I don't have any doubt that at any moment Rory McIlroy can come out of whatever slump this is that he's in if he finds it, because he has the same killer instinct that Tiger does, and he can go out and dominate a major by 8 shots, and he's done it twice. So let's look forward now, even though there's still 6 weeks to go, to Augusta. Who are you most impressed with this year so far? Who do you think is going to bust out of the pack of players that hasn't won yet this year, too?
Well, Augusta is a one-of-a-kind place, so you can't, you're right, guys, it's horses for courses, same guys tend to play well there, but there's such an emphasis on putting. You know, I said early in Rory's career, I don't think this guy's ever going to win a Masters. He can't handle the greens. He's not that good of a putter. He doesn't have the speed down. I mean, and this putter is the weakest club in his bag right now. So a guy with whose weak spot is a putter, I don't think is going to win Augusta. So I will stick by my call from what however many years ago it was, that I don't think Rory's ever going to get a Masters. Spieth is just the opposite. He's great on those greens. He's great with his wedge. You know, he drives it well enough to get in play. When his irons are on, he's a terrific iron player. So there's a guy who has already had a couple chances to win Masters, and frankly, he should have 2 right now, and he had a chance for a third one when he was so immature he couldn't get out of his own way in the last round against Bubba Watson. So there's a guy, you know, let's face it, if you're in a draft with a Masters pool, you always want to get Spieth on your team because he's going to have a chance. He can handle those greens just like Crenshaw did, just like a few other guys did. He's always up there. Dustin Johnson's another guy that I'm not sure how good his putter really is. That said, he hits it so far, I think he can almost do what Tiger did in 97. I think he can just wedge the course to death. If he's hitting wedge into every green, I think he might be able to hit it close enough where his putting doesn't have to be great. He can just make a bunch of 8-footers for birdies and eagles, and that could stand up. But if it's going to come down to putting, I don't think he's the guy to win the Masters either, you know. So it's funny because you got 5 guys with different games, and on their, if they all play their best, who's really number one right now? Never mind what they won. Just look at their games. Jason Day seems like, I thought his game, his best, was better than Rory's best or Spieth's best Spieth's best in 2015. And then Dustin Johnson came in and showed us like another level. But, you know, now Justin Thomas is coming in and he seems like he doesn't have any weak spots in his game. He's long. He's reasonably straight. He's a great iron player. He's got a great short game. He's what a great bunker player he is. And he makes a ton of putts. So I kind of thought Dave was maybe the best player. He's played two tournaments this year, I think. And did he play Honda? I didn't keep track of him. But he had a win in the second place in his first two outings. Like, well, there's a guy who's back on track. But I'm kind of thinking that maybe Justin Thomas is the best guy of this whole group. So it's going to be interesting. I agree with everything you said about not missing Tiger. It was great seeing some other guys get a chance to make some history and start building their careers. And the nice thing is these guys are all fun guys. They're nice guys. The media likes them. The public likes them. They tell you what they think. They don't give you stock answers. They give you honesty, and I've enjoyed that. But Tiger comes in and adds another, I don't know what the word is. He adds something else to the mix. It's like, be like Whitey Ford coming out of retirement to pitch against the Yankees, you know, in the 70s or something. It's just a wild card you weren't expecting. And you also can't write off Mickelson's not, he's had a pretty good run. He's not hopeless. I don't know if he can putt well enough for 4 days to win a tournament, but if there's one place he can win, as you said, Jay, he knows Augusta inside is out as well as anybody. So I wouldn't be averse to having him on my Calcutta team in Augusta because I know how to play that course. But I think it's a great question. I like Justin Thomas. I like Jason Day. I like Jordan Spieth, and I like Dustin Johnson just a hair less than those three guys. I don't think that's a course for him. I'm just not considering him. Tiger, I don't see him being ready to win a major, but he's Tiger. I mean, you would have lost a lot of money betting against him for 20 years.
Well, you know, there's three people that we haven't talked about, and they're all on the European side of the ledger. The first one being, of course, the defending champion, Sergio Garcia.
Well, we haven't seen him over here much. I think his wife's expecting their first child in March, so.
They are.
That's a distraction that could mean his game is rusty, or it's a distraction that takes all the pressure off him and allows him to come in with zero expectations instead of having that burden of being a defending champion that guys always say isn't a burden, but it always is. So, I can't help but think that Sergio, that was the career moment for him, the career-defining moment. It's human nature to get complacent. He's got a major, the most important thing in his life so far is about to happen. It's hard to see him really maintaining the drive that he had before. You know, he got his Masters. He can retire now if he wants to. I mean, he doesn't want to, but he just hasn't been playing enough to really have a read on where his game is. So he's going to come in. He's going to have to be sharp without having a lot of tournament play before the Masters. And I don't know. I would tend to think that having a child will kind of cut into his practice time and probably hurt his preparation. But like
well,
I said,
you know
I,
what
I,
they
I,
say I, though. Beware the joyous father.
Yeah, yeah. He said it could burst the bubble of expectations and really relieve the pressure for him. And he, you know, the guy's a great ball striker. I was as surprised as anybody. I mean, I think he didn't think he was ever going to win a Masters, and you know, he did. He beat Justin Rose, another guy who I've always thought was going to win a Masters, but hasn't. He came close. I don't know. I guess I'd lean towards Sergio being not ready because of the baby and being a little complacent as defending champ. But I think, you know, he's got a life experience about to happen, and he'll be a happier person for it, and he's not going to worry too much about whether he wins or doesn't win or plays well or doesn't well. He's got other things in the fire. So that tends to, for me, I wouldn't, if I was betting, and I was betting on golf is stupid, but I was betting, I would not be putting money on Sergio this time.
Well, what about Justin Rose, though? You know, former U.S. Open winner, runner-up last year to Sergio, solid player, constantly in the big moments. We haven't heard too much from him this year. But then again, you know, he's solid. He's got all the components to win at Augusta, like you said. Are we overlooking him?
Well, yeah, he gets overlooked because he doesn't win as often as the other guys do, and he does it in a little less ostentation fashion. I mean, he won the Olympics, obviously, which I don't know whether that really meant anything, but doesn't hurt his confidence. Yeah, he's had a lot of low rounds. If you look back, the number of times he was either the first round or first or second round leader or near the lead in the first two rounds, he and Paul Casey have shot a lot of low rounds in Augusta. And last year, I really thought Justin was going to finally pull it off, but, you know, Sergio had his career week. So he's a guy who's overlooked because he doesn't play it quite at the same level quite as often as those other five or six guys we just talked about. So he's right there. He's certainly good enough to win a Masters. I'm still waiting for him to do it.
One more player that we haven't mentioned, again on the European side of the ledger, somebody that had a fantastic finish to 2016 and looked like he was going to be around for quite a while, and then we haven't seen or heard much from Henrik Stenson lately.
Well, Henrik's not so young. He's well into his, I think he's 42 or 43.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, at the Ryder Cup in Minneapolis, both he and Rose were playing hurt, which probably was the real key to their defeat. Those guys had to play five matches, and physically they were not 100%, and that really hurt him. I think, you know, he's got his major. He may have gotten complacent. At the same time, he's gotten to that age where either your putting goes away or you start having a bad back or you have physical things that keep you from practicing long enough to be sharp. So I think those are all obstacles for him to overcome, and it's a lot tougher to do it at 43 when you've got more money than you'll ever spend. You've got your major. You tied the low career – the time you tied the low score at a major championship, 63, he kind of – that was his moment. That was the cap to his career. Everything else now is gravy, and again, it doesn't take much complacency to bring you down from that peak level where you're putting all the work in. You just put a little less work in each day, and the next thing you know, you're ranked 27th in the world, and you're not in the conversation. So I think that's where he is. I don't really know. I don't think I've even seen him play on TV or anywhere this year, so I don't know what his story is, but my guess is age is catching up with him, and so is desire. It's hard to keep going. It's very rare to have guys like Vijay Singh and Phil Mickelson. You go back to Tom Kite, guys who just want to keep chasing it. And maybe Henrik's not one of those guys. I don't know.
One last question. The big news coming out today that the USGA is doing away with the 18-hole playoff and in all of their tournaments, but of course most famously or infamously, depending on what side of you're on, in the U.S. Open. What are your thoughts on the change to a two-hole aggregate?
You know, I mean, I was never a fan of coming back on Monday. It just seemed like an outdated thing. You know, not as outdated as playing 36 holes but on Monday. But nobody wants it. It's bad for TV. It's bad for the event, other than Tiger versus Rocco, which never really worked. So I'm not going to miss it. I think every golf tournament and even the majors and even the U.S. Open, they've long since gone from being golf tournaments to being TV shows. It's bad TV to come back on Monday. It's better TV to have a dramatic finish. And really, the best TV of all is to have a sudden death playoff go one-on-one. So I'm a little surprised. The USGA, they never change anything, but they did make a bunch of rules changes that are going to go into effect next year. So the winds of change are at the USGA. I'm surprised they made any changes. And if you're going to go to something, I'm a little surprised they didn't just go to a sudden death playoff. But maybe a two-hole thing will work out. It's not as long as a three-hole thing. I just hope, why do I know they're not going to be smart enough, Jay, to realize, all right, we got a two-hole playoff and a good chance it'll be tied and they might have to go three or four holes. Why do I know they're not going to be smart enough to move their tee times up to finish before dark? Just like you saw with the Honda Classic, they want to finish right at 6 o'clock in prime time, and it's dark, it's light until about 6:15 in Florida, and they had time to play one hole, and if Justin Thomas hadn't won that hole, I don't think they could have kept going. So why do I know the USGA is going to try to get into prime time and they're going to have a playoff and they're not going to be able to get it done because they didn't push their tee times ahead. So we'll see, well, but I mean,
That's everybody, though. The PGA of America did the same thing at Valhalla. We mentioned that tournament before. Remember, they let Rory and his playing partner hit into Phil Mickelson's group and everybody finish up as, what was a six-some or something like that? That was hilarious. Although that Phil didn't find it funny at all.
No, I agree with Phil. That was complete disgrace. It never should have been allowed. And that's exactly what I mean. You're sacrificing the tournament for television. I mean, you might as well. Why is there a USGA? Why don't you just let Fox Sports run the tournament? Because that's what they're going to be the ones who call the shots. Just like maybe CBS doesn't call the shots at Augusta. I'll give them that. But CBS certainly calls the shots, calls the schedule at the PGA. They're in charge of the TV shows. So going to a sudden death or a two-hole playoff, that's for TV. I don't have a problem with it. 18-hole. Playoff wasn't very compelling anyways, and it's a new day, a new century. Let's move on to something a little more interesting. And, you know, 18-hole playoff is like watching paint dry. So I don't think it's a bad tradition to end. I don't know if the two-hole thing's the way I would have gone, but, we may still get some exciting finishes. You know, I don't know that the four-hole thing at the British Open is that great. I feel like that's a little too long. It goes on a little long. I'd like to see 3 holes. I've always said I wish the Masters had a 3-hole playoff and they should play Amen Corner. 11, 12, and 13, it'd be great. You got a par 4, a par 3, and a par 5. You know, can you imagine finishing on 13, a hole that guys can easily make a 3 on? That would be sensational, but they don't want to move
the problem there is that there's no gallery.
Well, no, not even that. The problem there is those holes at the bottom of the hill, that's the darkest place in the golf course. So if you're going to leave time for a playoff, I mean, well, that's why they quit playing 11, because if you go down there, it's too dark. They want to play 10, which is still in the light, and you come up 18, which is still in the sunlight on top of the hill. 11, 12, and 13 are down in the trees. It gets darkest there sooner. So they would have to move their tee times even up even farther. And if there's no playoff, now you're not going to finish at 7 o'clock Eastern time, which is, you know, I don't know what the difference is. It must be gigantic numbers to finish at 7 o'clock versus 6 o'clock. They must rake it in, because to risk these tournaments finishing on Monday just for that 1 hour, and they do it on a regular basis, and a lot of times they get caught with their pants down, but it doesn't change a thing. They keep doing it. So must be a lot of money involved in that. I'm not a TV expert, but so I think it's probably a good change. I won't miss an 18-hole playoff. Good riddance. Let's finish on Sunday. I always said send these guys out early on Sunday morning, let them finish at 1 or 2 o'clock. And then if you have a playoff, those two guys, whoever's in it, those two guys can go back out. You got two guys; they can play 18 holes in 3.5 hours. You can go out and play another 18 Sunday afternoon if you tee off sooner. But
well, if you're going to do that, you do 9 holes.
No, you could.
You know, that's funny. You don't have to go the whole 18, but you don't have to worry about one or two bad bounces costing you the tournament.
Yeah,
the problem with a sudden death playoff is one bad bounce.
Yeah. Well, the worst one was when the the Players Championship, when they started the playoff at 17 and Guidos hit one in the water against Sergio. So, like, you can't have a sudden death playoff start on a par 3. I don't have a problem with the par 3 being in a sudden death playoff, but it should not be the first hole. So I think it's fine. It's probably an improvement, but again, it doesn't matter. It's for TV, because these are made for TV events. They aren't golf tournaments. They're not made for championships. They're television shows.
Yeah, well,
USGA has long ago succumbed to that.
What's best for television is quite frequently not best for golf.
Well, How about the Tiger Woods Rocco Mediate playoff? They play 18 holes on Monday. They're tied. Where do they go to continue the round? I mean, this is the USGA.
They went to number seven. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
You never go out of order in the USGA. You always go to number one. You always go to number one. And they go to number seven. I mean, and it just so happened, and this was coincidence, but it was because of the layout of the course that helped the gallery. But it just so happened that Tiger was, what, 5 or 7 over par in the first hole? Just a coincidence. Nobody planned it that way, but just a coincidence that Tiger didn't have to play the hole that he couldn't play at all. They went to number seven instead and he won. So I'm not saying, I'm not even implying there's any wrongdoing in that. It was just a logistical thing. But still, the USGA, if they were in charge, that playoff would have gone to number one because that's how you play golf.
Right.
And that's not how they do it now. So they're all TV shows. End of story. So good luck to TV. Just remember to move the tee times up so you have time for this two-hole playoff.
Gary, thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll look forward to catching up with you as we get closer to the U.S. Open. Everybody, I am Jay Flummer. You're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We'll be right back after this.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Plays show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this thing up here, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as a theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner. You can read me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Plays show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.